You are listening live to the program. Your teams, your town, your program.
Here it is, Kingsley Suamataia.
Nice.
From BYU.
Athletic, long, like all these young guys, you know, there's inconsistencies in the games right now that he'll have to come here and work on, but he's going to come here, provide, you know, good competition here at the tackle position. You know, we did a lot of work on Kingsley, and you can see the athletic traits. So he's going to come in here, provide, you know, depth, competition.
It's a special place for our fan base, and I believe it could be a special place for our fan base for another 25 years with the right renovation. But we're just going to have to be open-minded in how we approach this. And that may involve a new stadium, and it could be an open-air stadium or it could be a dome stadium.
And now, a man who can't wait to hear Tim Grunhard try to pronounce Suamataia, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a post-draft Monday. We've got a lot to discuss. We, of course, lead with the top story. That is the elimination of the Phoenix Suns in the NBA playoffs. Let's dive into this. I'm kidding.
That's what Tate wants to hear. Actually, he probably doesn't want to hear that.
No. Yeah, he probably doesn't. Being a Suns fan.
The one Suns fan I know.
No, we will not begin with the NBA. We will begin with the NFL draft. The Chiefs took seven players. On average, each year, if you figure it's a five-year cycle, if you were going to turn over your entire roster, 10 new players a year, right? Every 5 years?
Yeah.
53-man roster?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not how it works. You don't turn the whole roster over. Guys like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce exceed that. There'll be a handful of guys. 22 starters. Going to turn over, let's say, 20 of them. Better find four starters a year. Doesn't all have to be in the draft.
Right.
Could be in free agency. Could be college free agents. Can be trades. But you've got to be constantly replenishing the roster. A number of things. Travis, first of all, has already grabbed a line. The phone lines are open at 913-3810-810. You can grab a line right now at 913-3810-810. We are going to open talking some Chiefs draft. Disappointing weekend for Sporting Kansas City. Royals do drop 2-3, but they're 5-5. In the first 10 of 19 straight against winning teams. So playing very, you know, competitive baseball.
They have outscored the collection of above 500 teams they have played by 4 runs.
Yes. And even they lose 2 out of 3 to the Tigers, but they outscored them in a run differential. I think 14-10.
Yep.
They outscored them by 4 runs.
Just ran into an ace yesterday, yeah. And one guy had a crap outing on Saturday.
Yeah.
It happens.
I mean, it happens.
Baseball happens.
Royals are still very much in the thick of things in the American League Central. So a big weekend for them. Again, they dropped 2 out of 3, but overall, looking at the big picture.
Yep.
But the draft kind of sucks up all the oxygen in the room, particularly if you don't have an NBA franchise during the NBA playoffs or an NHL franchise during the NHL playoffs.
Like the Suns. Like Phoenix.
Oh.
They don't have an NBA franchise.
Don't send me down that road.
I won't. It was too easy a joke.
There's somebody who told you, not that there weren't many others.
Oh,
was president of the.
Yes.
This ain't gonna work.
I remember that.
With the Suns playing.
I remember that.
We used to have a Suns fan here. He was all excited about Bradley Beal, and I was like, no, pass. He don't play much, and when he does, he's a ball hog. So see how this is gonna work.
Bad mix.
Now, we'll get into some NBA playoffs a little bit later on, particularly with the NFL draft. Going to be in our rearview mirror. By the way, we'll talk NFL draft with Adam Teicher later on. Two-minute drill coming your way. We'll get some thoughts on the draft from some of the folks that covered the teams that made their picks. And then we will talk Royals baseball to wrap things up. David Leske will be with us in the 5 o'clock hour. So we got a lot coming your way. Phone calls first, 913-3810-810. We say it all the time, Chiefs, Royals, Sporting, Missouri, K-State, KU, always a topic here in the program. 913-3810-810. You can hit me up on the Twitter. It's at Seren Petro. I'm going to post a poll here in a minute. Scrambling around here to get things going today. I'm going to just basically ask for a letter grade. I'm not giving F as an option.
Right.
Because I don't think there's any way, just as we said on Friday, but I saw no way for Xavier Worthy to be an F?
Yes. If you think this draft was an F, you don't.
It was F'd?
Yeah, well, yeah.
From the
right.
get-go, or at what point?
It wasn't intentional or even a slip-up.
Wow.
If you think this draft, I tried to put the T on, this draft was an F, then you do not have the requisite football knowledge to take part in our poll. I'll say that by myself.
Yeah.
I won't put that on you. But that's one of the reasons we don't put F out there, because if you think it's an F, I don't want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Be serious about things, folks.
I don't see how it can be. I saw a...
If they drafted a bunch of baseball players.
I saw a write-up, I don't remember where it was, that had the Chiefs draft as the draft that exceeded the mock draft composite
mm-hmm.
as far as the value of where they got picks. Mm-hmm. In other words, like, you know, the safety, Hicks, was composite. They compiled hundreds or thousands of mock drafts, came up with the average spot, and he was like 66, right? And they got him at
133.
So that was like great value. Overall, they had the most value of where the composites had them going. I don't know what to think of that. I mean, that sounds great on the surface if they're good mock drafts.
Yeah. But mocks are only the opinions of people who aren't making the picks. And I'm always iffy about those. And whenever someone takes a player, and there's always a fan of somebody, of one of those teams going, oh, and they took him in the fourth. They could have got him in the sixth. I'm like, how do you know that?
Yeah.
Well, the mocks had him in the sixth. So?
Yeah. By the way, I know Jason mentioned this, but if you're just hopping into your car or just tuning us in, Travis Kelce has been extended 2 years. On his contract, making him the highest-paid tight end. I don't know that it even really matters how long he signed out for, but this is a way to throw a bunch of upfront money at him now and probably rework the deal, bring the number down, is why this is being announced. You know, this is kind of an annual thing. It comes time to sign the draft picks. Travis Kelce gets his deal reworked. You notice how there's kind of like a commitment. You want to play, and you're playing at a high level. We're going to keep paying you. And we're going to keep giving you money up front. This is the Tom Brady process to how your contract is never going to be the biggest contract that a tight end ever got. Tom Brady's contract was never the biggest contract that a quarterback got. And it's where I think they'll evolve into with Patrick Mahomes. They've done it a little bit. But the quantity of dollars that you're going to put in your pocket is going to be the most. And so when you see, well, Travis Kelce's the fourth highest paid tight end, except for he just got the most cash dollars of any tight end this year.
Yeah.
Right? That's what really matters. Now, because I'm pretty sure the big rolls that he drives rolls on premium fuel.
You don't think he's doing the 87 octane?
No.
Octane?
I think he's going 91, 93. 93 octane. Yeah, but... So it's about the total dollars in the Chiefs. Again, these are the subtle things that they do that keep them in a position where they can maximize the amount of talent that's on the roster and keep a happy locker room. Travis Kelce doesn't have to go ask for a big, new, fancy contract. They just keep adding it on and paying him more cash dollars right now.
Yep, and this locks him until 20 through 27.
But with the draft... I think this was a time that the Chiefs went into the draft, by my estimation, unless Donovan Smith is ready to go and will only play for the Chiefs and was on speed dial if the draft didn't go their way. This is, I think, the first time, or maybe not the first time, but certainly the most desperate of the bunch, most needful, let's put it that way, not desperate, needful of the bunch. They've been at a premium position going into the draft. Now you say, well, they traded Tyreek Hill. They needed a wideout. I don't know. They had Valdez Scantling. They'd signed Juju Smith-Schuster that first year. Last year, you can make a case for it. You know that maybe they were there, but they needed a left tackle. The question is now, since we covered Xavier Worthy quite a bit on Friday, is Kingsley Sua Mataia. Going to be a starting left tackle. Do they plug him in on day one? and go. And if they do, and he can handle it, shame on the rest of the NFL.
Right.
Shame on the rest of the NFL.
For letting the Chiefs grab that guy at 63.
Listen, I know one of the popular themes out there is how do the Buffalo Bills trade with the Chiefs? How do the 49ers trade with the Chiefs? Very easily. They're confident football teams that are worried about making their teams better, not worried about what other people are doing. It's something maybe all of us should consider in life. Worry about yourself, jackass.
That mindset always brought me back to people just assuming the Ravens were idiots when the Orlando Brown trade happened. So, oh my God, the Chiefs are their biggest rival in the AFC, their biggest threat in the AFC. How could they let Orlando Brown go to Kansas City? They're idiots. Well, if there's one thing, and I know Curtis likes to joke about how people talk about the Ravens draft, and I agree, but if there's one thing the Ravens have shown is they're not idiots. And so when a well-run organization like the Ravens, like the Bills, like the 49ers, does something that makes you question them, more likely you should be asking, well, what are they thinking that I might be missing? Because right. They're a really well-run organization.
Yes. If you make the best deal that improves your team the most, whoever that's with. And if it makes somebody else better, so be it. Go make the deal that makes your team better.
Yeah, first of all, the Chiefs have to be right. They needed a wideout. They took a wideout. They like fast guys. They took a fast guy. Oh, it can't fail. It can fail. Right? And the Buffalo Bills, let me point this out. The Buffalo Bills, they were in an all-in mode last year. They've had to cut guys. They've had to trade guys. Right? Because they're over the cap. They need cheap players. They need more draft picks. Right, this is somewhat akin to where the Chiefs were 2 years ago when they had a bushel of draft picks and they had to play a lot of rookies. That's where the Buffalo Bills are going. The Buffalo Bills have to field their team, right? And they need draft picks. They needed players. So this idea that they're dunces for trading with the Chiefs is, frankly, just lazy. I mean, they traded down again. Listen, do I love the player they took? No, he's slow. I mean, I don't like the Florida State wideout they ultimately took. And I thought for sure one of the things I thought was maybe happening, and maybe it'll still come around, but some people speculated on, are they going to be the team that trades for Brandon Ayuk? Was this, you know, there was speculation. One scout in the league said the Bills now have all night to try to work a deal for a veteran wide receiver. Because they don't have to pop on that pick. And if they can get one done, they can take something other than a receiver. And I will give the Chiefs credit as I come back to them and the fact that I think their biggest need was left tackle. And this is where if you want to ridicule the Bills, ridicule them because I think they did end up reaching on a receiver. Right? Like, they have plenty of needs. But they're like, well, we got to have a wideout. And Coleman from Florida State ran a really painfully slow 40. Now, maybe they had him on a private workout and he ran 0.2 faster and he's going to be a star. I don't know. But I'll bet you he wasn't marked anywhere before like round 5 for the Kansas City Chiefs. This is why they don't need 300 and some odd picks, because they ain't taking that guy where other people will value him. They're not looking for guys to win a jump ball all the time. There's some Loquan Treadwell. If you remember, that name was a big name. Went in the first round of the Minnesota Vikings. I can tell you the Chiefs were not going to touch that guy for rounds. And I'll bet it's probably the same thing with this guy. So listen, is that pick going to work out? I don't think so. Did they panic because wide receiver went? Maybe. But the idea of trading down with the Chiefs, they need picks. They need cheap, affordable players. And frankly, so do the Chiefs. Right? And that's one of the things where trade up again. Right? Now, they didn't give up quantity of picks. They did give up quality. They moved back. And probably because they felt like, hey, once we get past this number, they're all kind of the same. And or we have this guy rated and we're going to find out from Brett Beach. And I think there's probably a pretty good chance we're going to hear, oh, we had Sula Mataia.
The fact that there was a royal farmhand named Sully Matias
right.
is screwing with my head every single time I want to say that. if he had never played for the Royals organization, I wouldn't struggle as much as I do with it.
Right.
Sula Mataia.
So, yeah, it's that narrative. Number one, you're the Chiefs. Everything they do is right. They've won two championships, three of the last five. We'll see if what they did was right. I like what they did. I like the positions they got, and I do think they got value. I think there's reason to believe that these guys are really good fits. The athleticism of the kid at left tackle, I mean, I love the video of him jumping out of a pool.
That's just crazy.
That's the kind of thing you expect like a DB to do.
Yes.
Not an offensive tackle at well over 300 pounds.
That's something you wouldn't expect to do with no water in the pool.
So there's an explosion there. There's athleticism. There's a reason to believe that he can mirror pretty well.
But I'd rather have a guy who has the talent and the skill that needs to be honed than a guy who's like a finished project but is really isn't going to be any better than he is.
I think there's definitely upside with kid.
I mean, there's Andy Heck's supposed to be one of the best offensive line coaches in football. He's got a guy with a lot of skill set, freak show physical ability, and some other intangibles that he can mold into a pretty good offensive tackle.
Hicks, to me, I'll come to the tight end in a minute. Hicks, the safety, sounds a lot like Brian Cook. Adam Hill will be with us, actually knows Hicks' family. He's from Las Vegas originally. Adam Hill, who handles the Raiders beat for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, friend of the program, will be with us in the two-minute drill later on. But got a text from him right away. Great family. You know, great kid. And certainly not afraid to hit somebody, which is, as we know, a necessity if you're going to play defensive back for the Kansas City Chiefs.
What year did that come up? Was it the year that they came up short against the Bengals in the AFC title, that all year it seemed like there was a lot of talk about this guy, that guy making business decisions, and it seemed like the mission all offseason was find defensive dudes who can smash people?
Yeah. And by the way, Mike Edwards left in free agency. Brian Cook is coming off an ACL. And Justin Reed enters the last year of his contract.
Yep.
So that's a need position as well. And they're able to get what was one of the top safeties. In fact, I have to open back up Matt Miller's. I think he might have been Matt Miller's top one.
He was certainly a couple of ones I saw had him in at the time of the draft, had him around 38 as far as overall pick. Like, that's early second now. Again, it's the opinions of people who just know football, but I don't think that's it certainly isn't the opposite of value. And even if you think they may have overshot the runway a little bit with their assessment of him, he's at least around better than where they got him.
Miller had him at 57 overall on his big board, the number 3 safety of the Kuiper Field Yates mock draft. He went 72.
So why was he there at 133? I don't know. I always think when a player goes earlier than is expected, that's, and I probably say this more often than I'm sure people are tired of me talking about this, when a player goes earlier than you think, that's just the opinion of one team. You don't know what the rest of the league thought of this guy. When he goes later than everyone expected, that's the opinion of the entire league. Everyone passed on this kid of the four till for the first three rounds. So is there something they know that others didn't? I always wonder about that.
I think it's a legit question. But big hitter.
Yeah.
And that was the statement about Brian Cook. And like, well, is he going to be able to cover? Is he just a special teams guy? No, he could cover. He could play in space. And
is he going to have a better position coach anywhere than Dave Merritt? I mean, he's got the best in the business right now teaching him up.
Yeah, I love that pick.
I do, too.
And I think they've got a future starter that they got in the fourth round. Jared Wiley, the tight end, sounds a lot like Travis Kelce coming out of Cincinnati, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 6'6", big catch radius, more of a receiver than a blocker, good around the goal line, 8 touchdowns this past year at TCU.
He's older than most of their picks. He's 5 years in college, so he's not 20 or 21 like the first two guys they picked who were right at that number. But
is he Kelce's replacement? Well, from the standpoint that no one will ever replace Kelce,
right.
No, he's not. Because Travis Kelce's one of the all-time greats. But could he be a good starting tight end? Yes, they go in this round all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're about as likely to find a quality tight end down here at this point in the draft than you are taking him top 10, where the bust factor on tight ends has been huge. And so the position, along with the location he was selected, great value there. And then they did their normal. I'm going to skip the Penn State kid. But Kamal Haddon, sixth-round pick, corner. I assume he'll be good
because
they always are.
Yes.
Like, makes sense. He looks like every other corner.
Good ball skills.
Yeah.
Athleticism.
Led Tennessee in interceptions the last couple of years.
Yep.
Played at a high level. Yeah, you're like, well, if a guy played at a big league, why would he? You know, this Watson kid, why is he there in the seventh round? I don't know. But he can play.
Yes.
They've taken big school kids. They've taken Arkansas Pine Bluff kids and Josh Williams and gotten productivity out of them. So I assume they will in this case also. And when you play with six DBs, at least five on almost every snap, six a lot of the time, you need depth and you're going to be turning it over. And they're going to graduate a class of three of them in 2 years.
Right.
Right, so
this guy should be ready at that point.
They're going to need – that's why they've got to constantly be taking corners. And then I think it's pretty obvious when you take Hunter Norzad, guard center from Penn State, started out at Cornell, SAT 1470, in 22, got his – some kind of engineering degree. I can't remember if it was mechanical or what it was. And then in 23, got his MBA. Transferred to Penn State, played guard and center. He's played all along the offensive line. You know the Chiefs love flexibility. And then they grab another guard, small school guard from Holy Cross and C.J. Hansen late. They've got a couple of projects to try to get up and running. And listen, a lot of the things I read said Norzad could be starting this year. So I know there's become this theme that somehow Creed Humphrey was hurt last year. Chiefs haven't said that, but it's become a popular theme out there. I don't care whether he was or wasn't. The snaps have to be better. They have a competent center who presumably can snap. If nothing else, this puts pressure on Creed Humphrey. This gives them depth. Joe Tooney is getting older, but still playing at a really high level, although coming off a pec injury, and that's a difficult injury for somebody that's got to push all day.
Yep.
Right? They've got two other guys in the interior that are a year away from needing big paydays. They're now shoring up, and we've talked about it. Mike Caliendo and Lucas Niang were literally the only backup linemen. Someone else, actually, I take that back. It's one other guy, and I never even heard of the guy. So
he was here? What?
You know, the Chiefs do this routinely. It's amazing how the best player on the board seems to match up with their need. But they've been really good at it here of late. Brett Veach has gotten almost better every year that he's been drafting. Almost every year. You can go back and look at the drafts, and we'll go back and kick through a couple of them during this week. But it is almost a consistent arrow pointing up.
And as much as I grouse about that day three, the Ravens just get the draft. They just get the draft. We're starting to see more and more when I see tweets from people, Brett Veach, man, you just keeps doing it, just keeps getting better and better. That was a big theme I was reading from national guys on Saturday as they filled out that roster, particularly how well they did those first four picks.
We'll talk about what makes each one of these picks a success, what makes this draft as a whole a success. We love letter grades. Are they premature? Yes. Hell yes, they're premature, but it doesn't mean you can't do it. You
can't do it after they do it, after they play.
We'll do it now, and then we'll evaluate. We'll look back 5 years and see what we think of the draft class 5 years ago. Yes, then we'll have some final grades. But what's your impression of what they did? Grab a line right now. 913-3810-810, the phone number. 913-3810-810. You're in the program. All right, you're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Chiefs Royal Sporting, KUK State, Missouri. Always a topic here in the program. Chiefs draft, what makes it a success? What will make each one of these picks a success in and of themselves? I have a rule of thumb. I believe that first-round picks should start virtually right away, and I would hold that on Xavier Worthy.
So he's saying Mahomes is a failure, everybody.
Well,
other than quarterbacks.
Hashtag sarcasm.
No, I did amend it to the quarterback position is unique.
You also did say, have said multiple times, that at least in the case of the Titans game, they would have been better off with, you know, by about what, that Jets game, you said he should have been started anyway. So even that, it counts.
Well, and I'll say this. A quarterback is the one that an apprenticeship is reality. I mean, you can do that. But every, like, they need to start. Like, FAU is a bad draft pick right now. Let's call it what it is.
Yes.
Now, there's, you know, a reason for why he broke his hand and, you know.
Yeah, but his year ago was not just that he didn't start. It's that he didn't contribute.
He didn't play.
At all.
At a position that they rotate in.
If he'd played in, you know, in 10 or 11 games and had four or five sacks, you might see some flash, but he was rarely on the field.
And Xavier Worthy may not start at all this year, but certainly they play three and four wideouts at once. So he's going to need to be a contributor, and he needs to start sometime in the very near future. You don't trade up to get take a guy for him to be, like McCole
piece.
Hardman yeah. plus.
A
that
gadget.
Adds to it. The trade up always. He needs
Absolutely.
To be judged harder than you would normally judge a 31 number no 28 pick.
Because you didn't just spend the 28th pick on him.
Yeah, you gave up the equivalent of a sixth.
Yeah,
and we can look and say, okay, well, this is who you got in the fourth. Here are all the guys that went between where your third was, and where your fourth ended up being.
And Jason made this point Friday. They didn't just go from the last pick of the third to the first pick of the fourth. They traded down, I think, what, 40 picks?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's significant.
913-3810-810 overall, I like what they did. I think they're back in their rhythm of, for the most part, other than the tackle, making selections for needs a year in advance. Right? The interior offensive line. The corner, tight end, whether it's Travis Kelce retiring or Noah Gray looking to get paid, right? That's a spot that they're going to need over the horizon. And it makes it a competitive tight end room as well.
Yeah. And even the move for the player that for the position needed this year doesn't, on the surface, look like a reach. Looks like they got a guy they really liked, and he was there.
I don't know what's to not like about a 6'6 tight end that ran a 4'6.
Exactly. How about a guy who had 8 touchdown catches last year?
Yeah. I mean, listen, could he end up stinking? Sure. But
seems unlikely.
Off the numbers I can read off a page, sound decision.
And the offense in which he will be inserted.
913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Travis wants to lead us off today. You're in the program, Travis. What's going on?
Hey, Petro. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
So I liked what they did. I give their draft an A. I didn't necessarily like the trade up in the first, but if that's their guy and that's who they wanted, then, you know, I say go up and get your guy if that's your thing. The Hunter Norzad pick, I really liked. I kind of viewed him more of a Allegretti replacement than Creed Hunter. I know Creed's snaps were bad last year, but I don't remember his snaps being bad in year one or year two. So maybe it is an injury. I think Creed Humphrey is, you know, now that Jason Kelce's gone, I think he's probably widely regarded as the best center in football. So I don't think that he's somebody that you just replace with a rookie guy.
You perhaps move him over. And play him at guard.
Yeah, maybe. And then, you know, I really like the tight end pick. I mean, I saw somebody tweet out, did the Chiefs just draft another Travis Kelce? I think that was a little, you know, it's a little crazy to be comparing a rookie prospect to the greatest of all time. But, I mean, when you watch him play, he's got that little wiggle. He's got some Travis Kelce characteristics. So, overall, I think Brett Veach is great, and I think we're so fortunate to have him as our GM of our football team. And then just real quick on the – I'm sure you did – the Clark Hunt comments he made about the stadium.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking about it over the weekend. Is it possible that, you know, Jackson County just kind of called their bluff and was like, we're not renovating this stadium again, and so now – maybe the Chiefs knew that was coming. Maybe that's why their plan was so terrible. I mean, that plan was awful. And maybe it was a way for them to honor the love for Arrowhead, for those people that like it and enjoy it, but at the same time know that it was going to get declined, know that it was going to fail, so they could have an excuse then to go on and move on from it. I mean, I know it's a conspiracy theory, but it's just something I was thinking about. So have a great day, man.
All right, I appreciate it, Travis, and a lot of good stuff there. Let's talk about that stadium issue. Clark Hunt's comments, they're to be expected. They shouldn't have surprised anybody, certainly not anybody in Jackson County. And it's one of the reasons why I said, listen, I'm not going to tell Jackson County voters vote yes or no. I would vote no. I don't like the plan from the Chiefs, and I don't like dumping a bunch of money into an old stadium. So I would vote no. But if what you wanted was to keep the Chiefs in Jackson County, this will be your only opportunity to run unopposed to keep them in Jackson County. And I don't like the plan. There was way too much stuff that wasn't known. To say that that was like the plan, why bother? Why engineer a plan to fail?
Because they outlaid a lot of money in the planning of that. You know, it wouldn't just they put it on the ballot and said, hey, do you want a new stadium?
No, I know what it'll be. It's like, well, They had to make it look like they wanted to stay in Jackson County so that whatever they end up doing, you know, or maybe they will stay at the Arrowhead place, but now they want a dome and it's going to cost a lot more money. So they had to have something where they said, well, we tried to do it for less, but you guys didn't vote yes on it, so here we sit. This is now you have to do it this way. Is there truth in that? Listen, was that their absolute best possible plan? No. Absolutely not. Was it what they could do while being tied at the hip to the Royals to fit a timeline that the Royals are wanting to jam through quicker than the Chiefs? Maybe. I mean, I would put it this way. You know, I've said it many, many times. I think if you've listened to this program, in life, we always want there to be one person, one bad entity, one villain. If we go take care of this one thing, everything falls into place and it's all perfect. That is not life. That is not how it works. And that's not how this stadium thing worked. Was Frank Wright a hindrance to this plan? Yes. Did he have Jackson County's best interest at heart? Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, wanting the teams to pay money to Jackson County is a wonderfully noble thing. I don't think it had a snowball's chance in hell of ever getting done. Right? But it's noble. You know, was it done for noble reasons, or was it done to sabotage? I don't know. Only Frank White and his people know that. Royals and Chiefs certainly felt like he was a hindrance based upon the story that came out in the Star. But at the end of the day, they put forth something that was, in my opinion, a quick cash grab. Like, okay, we'll take it and stay, but only for 25. Like, do they think that a renovated Arrowhead is the perfect solution for Kansas City? No. They weren't willing to sign on for the 40 years that the Royals were. So, no, like there's all kinds of indicators that, like, we'll do it if this is what you want. And this is how we'll do it. But now I expect them to come back and talk Dome Stadium. And I expect the narrative to change. I expect the narrative to change from Mayor Lucas on a Dome Stadium. I expect the narrative to change from Mark Donovan on a Dome Stadium. And I expect the narrative to change from Clark Hunt. So, look, the good news is nobody's talking about leaving. And we told you several weeks ago that I was hearing that, you know, John Sherman was saying we're going to go it alone. Well, once he goes alone, the Chiefs are going alone. This is a narrative that behind closed doors, not even off the record, but just at parties and social gatherings, these guys were already saying, right, this is where it's going. Now the question is Kansas City, Missouri ready to step up and pay the freight to keep them, you know, to be carry the biggest burden to keep him in Jackson County, to keep him in this area? We'll find out. You know, we'll find out. But, you know, I think better to be transparent, and Clark Hunt was transparent.
Very.
But, you know, Jackson County will probably get another shot at it. Will it be a renovated Arrowhead? Boy, I hope not, but maybe. Maybe, but Clark Hunt has already told you. He's now willing to listen. 913-810-810. Let's go to Carl. You're in the program, Carl. What's going on, buddy?
Hi, Serrano. Couldn't talk Royals, but now after hearing all the draft talk, I want to change my topic.
Okay.
That's okay. And would just love to hear, maybe you've done this and I missed it, or maybe this is something you do on Red, Gold, and Bold, but how you graded past Brett Veach drafts and how that's looked out. What's his letter grade trending? And I hear you talk about, you know, grading him out in the future, and if you've done that in the for past drafts and what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do it right now. As a matter of fact, thank
was
you for the call.
Had our lunch today.
Yeah, I know we were going to do.
There was a guy sitting by us who was kind of leaning in. I didn't know where that was. Yeah. He was even trying to call an hour later.
We were going to do it later in the week, but I'll give you a quick preview, Carl. Thanks for the call. And I'll say this: like, let's go back when I mentioned that this is an arrow pointing up when it comes to his drafts, 2018. Which, when it happened, I cautioned everybody. I've looked through general managers for decades, and their first draft is almost always their worst draft. And I think we can expect that from Brett Veach as well. Well, a trip down memory lane will tell you they traded up in the second round after not having a first-round pick that went for Patrick Mahomes in 17. They traded up in the second round for Breland Speaks. Took Derek Nnadi in the third. Dorian O'Daniel also in the third. Armani Watts in the fourth. Tre'Mon Smith in the sixth, and Khalil McKenzie in the sixth.
Bad.
I mean, they took, you know, they got out of it. Let's see, how many starts?
Nnadi was the only guy who was in any way a consistent starter. Look at their weighted approximate value. They're all in the single digits with the exception of Derek Nnadi, who's at 33.
And Derek Nnadi the last couple of years has been, yeah, you know, a guy that gives those that can actually stop somebody a breather.
Breland Speaks played 16 games. That's brutal.
Dorian O'Daniel was a special teamer. Armani Watts was largely a special teamer. Tre'Mon Smith was largely a special teamer. Khalil McKenzie didn't play. It was a really bad draft. I mean, and that's what happens when you have a general manager who's one in the cockpit for the first time and two having to rebuild the staff.
And doesn't have a first-round pick.
As he's getting ready to go at it. Right? 2019. I'll give you 19 and 20 because those are the draft classes that we've come through a whole five-year cycle on. Or at least the opportunity for a fifth year in 2020. Yeah. They didn't pick it up on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But 2019, Mecole Hardman in the second. Why do they have a first and 19?
Was that for
Frank Clark?
Yes. That's what it was.
Mecole Hardman in the second. Juan Thornhill in the second. Colin Saunders in the third. Rashad Fenton in the sixth. Darwin Thompson running back in the sixth. And Nick Allegretti in the seventh. Clearly better. excuse me. Talk about the weighted approximate value. Four players in double digits. 10 for Nick Allegretti. 13 for Colin Saunders. Juan Thornhill 20 and 22 for Mecole Hardman. Right, Hardman scored touchdowns, made big plays, deepened the receiving core, stretched the field. It was a good pick. Fantastic, spectacular. Would it have been better with DK Metcalf? Yes, it would have. But was it a bad pick? No. Paris Campbell was the guy we related to, was the same type of guy. The Colts took him. He sucked.
Yeah, and weighted approximate value is a career accumulative stat. So to have a draft that's a year later and have four guys in double digits as opposed to one, that's certainly a step up.
Juan Thornhill was a starting safety for half of his time in Kansas City and part of a championship. Now, the championship we're never going to be that upset about Frank Clark's the trade for and contract for Frank Clark, but he didn't live up to it. Let's be clear. We're not mad because they won a couple of championships with him. But that's not the blueprint.
You hope, and I think Veach is a smart guy and his staff is made up of smart people, but you hope they look around going, hey, congrats on the Super Bowl, guys. Let's figure out what we got wrong there so we don't do that ever again.
Healthy dissatisfaction.
Third round, Colin Saunders was a rotational defensive tackle. That was a bit of a project coming from a smaller school in Western Illinois, and by the end was a very good rotational defensive tackle and got starter money to go down to New Orleans. Rashad Fenton had his moments and ultimately was traded went to Atlanta for like a sixth or seventh along those lines, but played for the team. And as their cornerback room got deeper, they traded him. Darwin Thompson, 225 rushing, 108 receiving, three touchdowns total, was a depth piece.
Conditional
seventh. And a special teamer.
Conditional seventh for Fenton.
Which may have been what they use for Nazi Johnson.
Could be.
But anyway, Listen, and then Nick Allegretti was a great depth piece. Really good depth piece.
Fantastic seventh round pick.
And then the last one that's done, in the sense of their first contract, 2020, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, almost 2,000 yards rushing, 12 touchdowns, 765 and 7 touchdowns receiving. Willie Gay, starter year 2, 3, and 4 with his defense. Lucas Niang, depth piece at tackle. Legarius Sneed, stud, absolute number one stud. Corner.
Yeah.
Michael Dana, starter money now. A legit other DN starter. Not your wrecking crew, mm-hmm. but the guy on the other side that, and versatile DN, move inside, rush, and Tharkarius Keyes, who they traded a 21-6th to get back into the 20 draft. That pick was terrible, although Tharkarius Keyes is still bouncing around, but they really don't value the 6th and 7ths much more than just we don't have to negotiate with the agent to sign him as a college free agent. As much as we think there's a 7th round, after about 3-4 rounds, they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why that trade was made. So, listen, again, starting running back to depth running back, he digressed. Starting linebacker, backup tackle with a handful of starts, stud number one corner, and very good rotational defensive lineman. Pretty good draft.
Not bad. Not bad.
Pretty good draft. And as we know, we're 2 years away from grading McDuffie, Karloftis, Cook, Chenal, Williams, Watson, and Pacheco, in addition to three other guys that were in that draft class. And that one's already shaping up real nice. Real nice. So, yeah, Red Beach is getting consistently better. Right? If I had a criticism, you can't need to trade up every year. And acquire more picks, whether that is trading veteran players. It's why I've kept thinking Chris Jones was going to get flipped. Somebody was going to get flipped. Get more picks. And the draft class of 2022, where they took Trent McDuffie and George Karloftis in round one, Sky Moore and Brian Cook. You don't mind Sky Moore in the second round when you also have another second that turns out to be Brian Cook. You have two firsts in front of it. You take 3 7ths and two of them are Jalen Watson and Isaiah Pacheco, plus Josh Williams in the fourth and Leo Chenal in the third. You don't mind Sky Moore. It's the cost of doing business when you have all those extra picks. And you don't mind trading up when you had 12 of them and you still end up netting 10 players.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there will be a reset draft at some point. I think there'll be a time where they flip some players.
And a player in a 7th for a 6th doesn't get it done. You're still not getting another pick, which mm-hmm. kind of is one of the in vogue veteran trades of the last couple of years.
But having lots of picks allows you to trade a 5th for a solid veteran.
Yes.
Who's got 1 or 2 years on his contract. It allows you to move a 6th. For a guy and take back a 7th for somebody who's a cap cut, but you don't want to sit there and win a bidding war for, right? It allows you to trade up for the guys that you think are difference makers. It allows you to trade in season because you've got the extra picks. And I'd like to see Brett Beach because I think he's good at the draft. I think I'd like to see him give himself more opportunities to showcase that. 913-3810-810, you're in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 913-3810-810, the phone number 913-3810-810. Taking your phone calls, Chiefs draft, the most popular topic. Let's talk about it with Mark. You're in the program, Mark. What's going on, buddy?
Well, not much. Hey, I got a question for you. Okay, so my biggest problem with the draft is kind of what you just mentioned. I'm not liking it. Veach seems to have a problem or panics year after year, especially at the wide receiver position, to trade up for players that would be available when it was our pick, or even better players.
If you do something year, let's first of all, if you do something year after year, it's a plan. It's not a panic.
Okay, then I'm going to call the bad plan, and I'm beginning to say this, and this is why I want your comment. Is it possible that Veach has a Dayton Moore problem? Dayton Moore for 14, 15 years.
First, what do you mean, like winning championships?
No, wait. I know they won. What I'm saying is he tried to get a starting pitcher. And there's no way you'd argue that he never got a starting pitcher, except for maybe Ventura, and unfortunately he passed away. no matter what he did, I mean, look, he picked up five starting pitchers like in the first two rounds of 2017, and the only thing we're kind of looking at is Brady Singer. Well, there be a problem with Veach to keep moving up the wide receivers? Yeah. I'm not saying he hasn't done a good job at some of the other positions,
right.
and we are winning. But I will say this, because I have to say this for a friend who's listening: Veach did not draft Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, or Travis Kelce. Those are the three people why we.
That's a fair point.
As long as we stick together,
that'll
be my point.
He is credited. Let me give you a little insight, though. He is credited with being the guy who was the real champion for Patrick Mahomes. And I'll give you another example. Like Chris Ballard. Now let me finish.
Yeah, hang on, Mark.
Okay, Mark, settle down. All right, I'll put you on hold, and when I'm done talking, I'll bring you back up. All right, but I'm not going to sit and shout over you. All right? He is credited with being the guy, and I've talked to the people who invested the time and did the scouting and was the one that was beating on the desk for Patrick Mahomes. Did he draft him? No, he didn't. And you're 100% accurate on Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones. All three of those guys were drafted by John Dorsey, who is currently not a general manager in the NFL. Okay, so you can credit those things to John Dorsey, and he deserves them. He's a very good talent evaluator. I always enjoyed my conversations with him. I think there's a lot of things he does right, but nobody in the NFL is giving John Dorsey a GM job right now. So you can trumpet the fact that somebody else took those guys, but the guy who took them has clearly done something wrong and twice. Now, he's on the staff in Detroit, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Detroit's making good picks. He's an excellent talent evaluator. But you got to play nice with the head coach. You got to play nice with the owner. You got to play nice with the business department. I don't know where he didn't play nice. You know, pretty easy to say the head coach and him butted heads, and you ain't winning opposite Andy Reid, and there's no reason to think they made a mistake in what they did. Now, to your point, you make an excellent comparison, Mark. I mean, I think it is. Yes, Dayton Moore came in preaching that pitching was the currency in baseball, and then he flopped on almost every single pitching decision he made. He stood his ground and wouldn't take the job until the Glass family committed to spending money in Latin America. And Yordano Ventura, along with Kelvin Herrera and Salvador Perez, were in his first wave of signings internationally. And then that dried up. But he did continue to commit to pitching and found Edinson Volquez and Jeremy Guthrie. Like, there are other ways. Just as there are other ways to find wide receivers. And Sammy Watkins and MVS, I know, was a disappointment, but caught some of the biggest balls ever thrown, like when they really needed him. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he's got this mystical powers that you can go get Frank Clark, and he kind of disappoints all year, and then he's like one of the greatest sackers in the history of postseason football. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how MVS can't catch a cold all season, but when you got to convert to ice a game, he falls on his ass and catches it in his breadbasket. I don't know how, when everybody's dropping like flies in the AFC Championship game against the Bengals, he pops off with a 100-yard game. I don't know how the F he does it. But it's freaky, and it counts, because we ain't giving them trophies back. So even the ones that you look at and you go, like, why did he do this? Like, the most important times, some of the ones that are the most questionable decisions, make the biggest plays. Okay? And so at the wide receiver spot, yes, he needs to be better. He needs to be better. But the solution to being better is not to quit drafting the spot. The solution is to draft it better. It's as simple as that. There's no way around it. He's got to keep firing.
The Lions kept doing that and blowing wide receiver spots, but they didn't give up. Eventually, they got Calvin Johnson.
Let me also tell you, and I had enough conversations with you. Like, listen, Bill Kuharik is everyone hangs trading his entire draft with the New Orleans Saints for Ricky Williams on Bill Kuharik. Mike Ditka, the owner, went to Tom Benson and said, whatever it takes. Bill Kuharik didn't want to do it, but the owner said, you will do it. You will give Mike Ditka what he wants. So there is another facet to every draft pick, and that is Brett Veach has a guy who ultimately has the hammer in Andy Reid. And Andy Reid likes his toys, and Andy Reid is a part of this equation as well.
All right, before C.J. Hansen, who was the last player drafted in the NFL out of Holy Cross? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.